We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Away we go, episode 797 of the Al Galdi podcast. It is Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024, the day after the passing of Larry Lucchino. Now, I don't mean to begin the show with sad news, but this actually is meant as a commemoration of a great life, not sad news. Larry Lucchino, he on Tuesday died at the age of 78. He was a major executive with the San Diego Padres and the Boston Red Sox, but he in the Washington, D.C. area is best known for having been a major executive with the Orioles and the Redskins. He worked for the law firm founded by Edward Bennett Williams, who owned the O's and was part owner of the Skins. Larry Lucchino was with the O's from August 1979 through October 1993, including being their president and chief executive officer from August 1988 through October 1993. He played a major role in the building of Oriole Park at Camden Yards, which opened beginning with the 1992 season and revolutionized stadiums in MLB. And Lucchino was a member of the Redskins board of directors from 1979 to 1985. The guy led an incredible sporting life. He, as an executive, won 5 World Series, including the 1983 World Series with the O's, and won a Super Bowl title with the Skins for the 1982 season. Yes, the calendar year of 1983 included the Skins winning the Super Bowl and the O's winning the World Series. So, a salute to the great Larry Lucchino. Hello and welcome to this Wednesday installment of the Al Galdi podcast. The quest for the next Super Bowl title for the Skins / Washington football team / Commanders continues. So the Commanders on Tuesday began their 2024 offseason workout program. The team on Tuesday also added another player via free agency. The free agent acquisitions just keep on coming. The Commanders on Tuesday afternoon announced the signing of unrestricted free agent linebacker Michael Walker. This is another depth signing. The 2024 season will be Walker's age 27 season. He was taken by the Atlanta Falcons in the fourth round of the 2020 NFL draft out of Fresno State. So he was drafted by the Falcons in Commanders head coach Dan Quinn's final year as Falcons head coach. Quinn was fired as Falcons head coach in October 2020. Walker played for the Falcons for the 2020 through 2022 seasons, played for the Pittsburgh Steelers this past season, including starting 5 games for the Steelers in the 2023 regular season. Next segment, high-level Commanders intel with a terrific guest, Commanders insider Ben Standig of The Athletic. Ben is a prolific mock drafter. He is a 3-time mock draft champion as determined by the Huddle Report. And Ben in recent weeks has altered his projection for what the Commanders will do with their number 2 overall pick in the 2024 NFL Draft. He has gone from having them take North Carolina quarterback Drake May to having them take LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels. Why is this? What is Ben basing this on? What is Ben hearing? He's going to tell us. Additionally, you will hear Ben address whether the 2024 draft is the most important draft in franchise history. You will hear Ben discuss the extent to which he considers quarterbacks like Michigan's J.J. McCarthy, Washington's Michael Penix Jr., and Oregon's Bo Nix as factors in the Commanders' quarterback decision. You will hear Ben on Commanders' general manager Adam Peters continuing to keep seemingly the rest of the NFL in the dark on what the team is thinking regarding that number two overall pick. You will hear from Ben why the Commanders trading interior defensive lineman Jonathan Allen, despite what Adam Peters said to Ben and others last week, still is a possibility this offseason. You will hear Ben's strong take on what Capitals and Wizards home games staying at Capital One Arena until at least 2050 means for the Commanders' next stadium potentially being in Washington, D.C., and more. Ben Standing, next segment. By the way, the D.C. Council on Tuesday afternoon voted to approve the bill for $515 million in funding to improve Capital One Arena and the surrounding area. The decision was unanimous, with 12 council members voting yes. One council member was absent. Also on the show, I'll talk about losses for the Capitals and Orioles, but a win for the Wizards. The Caps got ripped at the Buffalo Sabres 6-2 in a very disappointing loss in the Caps playoff push. The O's lost to the Kansas City Royals 4-1 at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. But the Wizards, our tanking and rebuilding Wizards, they beat the second best team in the Eastern Conference, the Milwaukee Bucks, 117-113 at Capital One Arena. The Bucks were without point guard Damian Lillard, but the Wizards were without a bunch of players. A nice win for interim head coach Brian Keefe. Chief Keefe coming through. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Email from Mike Harwell on the Commanders quarterback decision with their number two overall pick in the 2024 draft. Writes Mike, as you have noted, choosing a quarterback in a draft, in spite of all of the data, is a crapshoot. I prefer a traditional dropback pocket passer like Drake May to a roadrunner like Jaden Daniels, but I have to disclose that I went to high school in Charlotte with Drake's grandfather, who was an outstanding left-handed pitcher. I'm excited about the new ownership group and the coaching group for the Commanders. I believe that they took the correct approach in free agency, and I believe that their thoroughness will be evident in the draft. Keep up the outstanding work. Well, thank you very much for that, Mike. I would say this about Drake May. He's not necessarily a traditional dropback pocket passer. I get the sentiment, but May is mobile. May can move. Now, he's not Jaden Daniels mobile, but May can move. I'm sure that many of you know this, but in case that you don't, Drake May comes from a famous family. He comes from like UNC athletics royalty. The May family is this like legendary family in UNC sports and beyond. Drake's dad, Mark May, was UNC's starting quarterback for the 1986 and 1987 seasons. One of Drake's brothers, Luke May, was a really good basketball player at UNC, played at UNC from 2015 to 2019. Another one of Drake's brothers, Bo May, played basketball at UNC last season. And another one of Drake's brothers, Cole May, was a reliever for the University of Florida when it won the College World Series in 2017. Quite the family. Email from Billy D in NC, writes Billy D, getting close to 800 episodes. Wow, awesome job. When I listened to Jim Harbaugh's gushing quotes about J.J. McCarthy's pro day on episode 791 of your pod, a thought came to mind. Suppose that Harbaugh is not a fan of Justin Herbert. Suppose that Harbaugh wants to save salary cap dollars and get his guy, McCarthy. Would the Chargers consider trading Herbert? And most importantly, would our Commanders be interested in Herbert? I kind of like it. What say you? Thank you with the email, Billy D. J.J. McCarthy's college head coach, Jim Harbaugh, now the Los Angeles Chargers head coach, he, during his session with reporters at the AFC Coaches Breakfast in Orlando, Florida, on March 25th at the NFL's annual league meeting, raved about McCarthy. This was Harbaugh on McCarthy's performance at Michigan's Pro Day, which was on March 22nd.
The workout JJ had, I've been to a lot of pro day workouts and watched quarterbacks throw. That was the best I've ever seen a quarterback do at a pro day. I mean, not only was his feet great in the individual drills but then he started throwing and it was like every throw was, you know, right there. I thought our receivers did a great job too. They all had a great day, but that was the best throwing day I've ever seen.
Yeah, Jim Harbaugh called J.J. McCarthy's pro day the greatest pro day that a quarterback has ever had. J.J. McCarthy, the new king of the pro day.
That was the best I've ever seen a quarterback do at a pro day.
Yeah, there you go. Now, I am a big Justin Herbert fan, but here's the problem with the Commanders potentially trading for Herbert, if he's even available via trade. He's now making big money. The Chargers last July signed Herbert to a mega money multi-year contract extension. I'm not against paying a franchise quarterback mega money, but the Commanders, with their number 2 overall pick in this 2024 draft that is perceived to be a very good draft for quarterbacks, have a real shot at the holy grail in the NFL, the franchise quarterback on the rookie contract. Nothing in sports is more valuable than the franchise quarterback on the rookie contract, unless the Commanders just are not big fans of this quarterback class. I want them taking one of these quarterbacks in this draft and, of course, being right about that quarterback. And the irony of us having this conversation pertaining to the team potentially trading for Justin Herbert is that the team was not right about Herbert. The team could have taken him with the number 2 overall pick in the 2020 draft, did not. And that is one of the more painful NFL draft misses in team history. Well, we always hope that there is nothing painful going on in your life, but if you have been harmed by the negligence of someone else, or if someone who you care about has been harmed by the negligence of someone else, always know that the great law firm of Paulson and Nace is there for you. If you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace. Call 202-902-7611. And when you call, make sure that you tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Paulson and Nace is a Washington, D.C.-based family law firm that handles medical malpractice, personal injury, birth injury, legal malpractice, and consumer protection cases, offering aggressive advocacy for victims in Washington, D.C. and West Virginia. Paulson and Nace has won millions of dollars for clients. It was named as part of U.S. News and World Report's Best Law Firms 2024 edition. Paulson and Nace fights for victims of all kinds of situations, including victims of errors made during diagnosis, during surgery, or with medication, victims of injuries caused by dangerous medications or medical devices, as well as defective auto parts, victims of accidents involving cars, trucks, bikes, or motorcycles, victims of deceptive trade practices and false advertising, heck, victims of shady lawyers. If your attorney acts in bad faith, is unethical in his or her counsel, or is negligent in his or her work, you could have a claim for legal malpractice. Paulson and Nace has represented corporate clients throughout the region. Attorneys Chris Nace and Matt Nace are experienced trial attorneys who are not afraid to take cases to trials, and that's because Paulson and Nace wins trials. If you feel that you've been wronged, if you think that you've been wronged but aren't sure, call Paulson and Nace and schedule a no-obligation appointment. Call 202-902-7611. That's 202-902-7611. And when you call, tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. You can also visit PaulsonandNace.com. That's PaulsonandNace.com. Just don't forget to tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Paulson and Nace, if you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, if you are listening to this podcast via Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you can rate the podcast with a star rating. 5-star ratings are greatly appreciated. They help us out a lot. Thank you for doing them. Commanders General Manager Adam Peters, what do you think that he's truly thinking with the team's number 2 overall pick in the 2024 NFL Draft? Does he know with certainty who he wants? Does he look at North Carolina quarterback Drake May and LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels and Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy and say, yeah, this is a no-brainer? Or is Adam Peters right now uncertain? Is Adam Peters right now undecided? Is Adam Peters right now resorting to eeny, meeny, miny, moe to pick the quarterback who the Commanders take via their number 2 overall pick? Hey, there is a science to eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Well, as the great quarterback debate rages on and as we draw closer to the 2024 draft's first round, which is on Thursday night, April 25th, I am very pleased to welcome back to the podcast a regular guest, Commanders insider Ben Standig of The Athletic. Ben does an awesome job of covering the Commanders. He's the host of the Standig Room Only podcast. You can follow him on X at Ben Standig. Hey, Ben, how are you?
Al, I'm doing all right. I'm watching the Orioles hit walk-off homers. The draft is almost here. What could be bad?
It is a good time of year. That is true. I, on Tuesday's show, episode 796, said that the Commanders 2024 draft may be the most important draft in franchise history. And I know that that sounds like hyperbole, but A, new ownership, B, a new front office, C, a new coaching staff, D, the number 2 overall pick in a draft that is perceived to be a very good draft in terms of quarterbacks, as the Commanders are a quarterback needy team. And E, yes, we have an E, having 6 of the top 100 picks in the draft. You consider all of that, and I do believe that this is the most important draft in franchise history. Are you with me? Can we formally, officially make this declaration?
Oh, boy. Well, let's think about this. Like, when I first came into existence, when this team became something I started to pay attention to 100 years ago, I was not there for George Allen. I'm not that old. But, like, you know, okay, he traded away a bunch of picks. And then Bobby Bethard was, like, kind of all over the place. He's trading a bunch of picks. So, like, they didn't really have a ton of first-rounders, per se. And then you move through, and I don't know, Norv, Charlie, I don't know if there was anything there. You know, I guess, like, on some weird level, like, I know what you're saying, like drafting RG3, moving up to do it, the aggressive nature. I think by that point, we already were pretty aware that Dan Snyder was not great at being an owner, he says kindly. But I don't know if the last wheel had completely come off the car at that point, because like, hey, he hired Spurrier, he hired Gibbs, he hired Mike Shanahan. I don't think we're like, oh, this is pretty, you know. I mean, I know there was somebody else in between before I get him. But, so getting RG3 was a huge deal. But to your point, like, this is such a tone setter, right? Because it's been a honeymoon year for Josh Harris. Everybody was just thrilled he was arriving, and it could have been literally almost anyone in that seat that wasn't Dan Snyder. People would have been happy. Then this offseason, you know, to get Peters, I know Dan Quinn wasn't the number one choice for a lot of people out there, but obviously it's been viewed largely as a pretty positive pick around the league. But now this, right? If you screw this up, I hate to say it, but right, if you mess this up, you know, all of a sudden, by the time they get to the next, maybe it's not next year's draft, but the next time they have to get a quarterback, there's some questions that'll start to arise. So, I guess you could make the argument. I don't know. I'd have to do a lot more math before I could declare it officially the gold medalist. But yeah, I understand your point, because this is completely new. There is a legitimate line in the sand. It's not just a new coach. It's not just a new whatever. It is new everything. And it is a tone setter in that moment. They happen to have the second pick, and it's a quarterback year. So, yeah, I mean, I get the argument.
The Commanders' decision with this number 2 overall pick, I mean, it's basically impossible to overstate how big of a decision this is. And whatever the decision is, it is going to be looked back upon and scrutinized for years. You in the Athletic's beat writer mock 2024 draft first round 2.0 that came out on March 21st had the Commanders taking Drake May at 2. But you in your own mock 2024 draft first round that came out on March 25th had the Commanders taking Jaden Daniels at 2. And now you in your latest own mock 2024 draft first round that has just come out still have the Commanders taking Jaden Daniels at 2. I know that you put a lot of time and thought and research into your mock drafts. You don't just make picks in mock drafts to generate attention. So what thinking, what intel led to you switching from May to Daniels for the Commanders?
You know, yes, you're trying to be as accurate as you can. And since this is the team that I cover, I'd like to get that pick, especially since it's the second pick. It's one thing to guess at 16. People accept that, you know, there's a lot of options at 2. Feel like you kind of got to get it. And since this team has not been very nice about telling us anything, I say that tongue in cheek, but like that's just kind of the way that it is. I'm like, all right, well, let me go outside the building and just get a feel as best I can for what everybody else is kind of viewing this. And certainly all the primary quarterbacks that you would imagine being picked, if not that's 2, at least in the top, you know, 10, 20 first round, have their backers and they have their doubters. I just think that from what I've heard from the positives coming off of Jaden Daniels are higher. Like some people think they would take him over Caleb Williams. I don't get those highs from Drake May or McCarthy. The flip side or the lows, like I haven't had anybody say to me, boy, Jaden Daniels, look out for that guy. I mean, everybody needs work, but like, you know, I'm not hearing people go, I don't know, I'm not seeing it. Whereas like with Drake May, there's definitely much more of a, yeah, he's got some footwork and mechanics and some other decision making he's going to have to really work on, and it's going to take a while. And, so ultimately that was sort of my difference, was just in talking to as many people as I could and whatever research I could do, it just felt like the Daniels part of this was, you know, if Caleb Williams is one tier, Daniels, if he's not his own tier, was closer to the top one than he was below. Whereas with May, it's more the opposite. He might go third, but just in terms of the number of people, it felt like that was where that there was a gap there. And that's kind of where I went with Daniels.
You mentioned how secretive the Commanders are being with what they're thinking with that number 2 overall pick. Do you think that we know anything more today than we knew, say, a month ago regarding what the Commanders are going to do with their number two overall pick?
I don't think so. When you look at what like the national insiders talk about, how do I say this nicely? I think for the most part, I'm not saying they don't work hard or whatever, but for the most part, I think you got to look at all of them as sort of Ron Burgundy, right? Whatever is in the teleprompter, they're going to say. Sure, they may have their own opinion, but because they're in a unique spot of being able to talk to people, it's way cooler to say, hey, I'm hearing this, thus sounding like you have the sources, right? Than it is to say, well, I think I would take this guy. No offense, I don't give a crap about almost anybody's opinion on these things, except for the people who are truly, truly doing this and those inside the building. I mean, if you're listening to this, you're one of those people who breaks down tape, God bless you. Have fun. I hope you enjoy it. I don't care. Your opinion is no different than mine, and I don't care about mine either on these things. Again, it's just that. So their opinion, they're going to tell you what they're hearing. Is anybody hearing anything from these people that suggests they know what is going on? I don't think so. I mean, even that Pelissero bit from the owners meeting where he said he's talked to people who know Adam Peters, and the number one answer that they kept coming up with was J.J. McCarthy. He did not at one point say he talked to people who have talked to the Commanders, or that according to sources that no, he just told people no different than you could walk into the, walk into Caddy's in Bethesda or, I don't know, the front page is long gone. Jeez, you can tell how little I go to bars in D.C. anymore. Whatever. You go walk down the U Street corridor and say, hey, what do you think? It would be almost the same thing, except for the fact that these people know Peter. So, no, I really don't think we know more than we did a month ago, which is good for them, not fun for us. But, it is what it is.
The Tom Pelissero thing was so funny to me. We on March 25th. On the NFL Network show, The Insiders, in the exact same segment, seconds apart, had two NFL insiders from NFL Network and NFL.com saying two totally different things about what the belief is regarding what the Commanders will do with the number two overall pick in the 2024 draft. Mike Garofolo said that NFL teams were thinking, quote, that Washington is locking in on Jaden Daniels, end quote. Then just seconds later, Tom Pelissero said that per executives from NFL teams who know Adam Peters and the Commander situation, well, quote, the most popular answer for what they do at number two is J.J. McCarthy, end quote. Garofolo said Daniels. Seconds later, Pelissero said McCarthy. And that, to me, was a perfect example of Adam Peters playing everyone like a fiddle. Something that comes up is that there might be a type of quarterback that Peters prefers. Do you believe that the type of a quarterback a guy is will heavily factor into what the Commanders do it to?
I mean, there's always tiebreakers, right? I mean, the gap between any of these guys may be pretty minimal. And then at that point, you start having to, break it down that, well, this one is a better fit for this. This one does this a little bit worse or whatever it might be. So it's possible. But I think the thing is, like, and this was part of my frustration when people were saying, well, they signed Marcus Mariota, therefore it must be Jaden Daniels, is that you're acting as if this is like Baskin Robbins and there's 31 flavors and just everything is covered, right? Every part of your taste bud is there. This isn't the case. These are the options they have. They're not all perfect. They're not all potentially exactly what you want, but this is what is there. You have to determine, do you like these flavors or do you not? And so they may have a type. I'm sure Adam Peters is, probably in his head worked up an exact quarterback prospect that he would love. I don't know that any of these guys are them because this is what they have. So, like I said, if there's a tiebreaker, then maybe certain attributes, go a certain way, whether that's, the ability to read defenses quickly at the line of scrimmage. They have talked about, being mobile. Clearly, like a Jaden Daniels is more mobile than, say, J.J. McCarthy, but McCarthy is, pretty athletic on his own right. Same thing with May. I guess I would just say, like I said, if it's a tiebreaker, sure, but not as like a standalone. This is what they have to work with.
When you think about what the Commanders are going to do with their number two overall pick, do you view it as Drake May versus Jaden Daniels, or do you view it as May versus Daniels versus J.J. McCarthy?
I think I've reached a point where I view it as Daniels followed by McCarthy versus May versus trading down. Is kind of how I would look at it, I guess. Like, I don't know. Like, I've seen people say that if you sort of, you know, put in all the things that a Shanahan tree person would want and you spit it out, that like J.J. McCarthy would be like the guy. I think I heard Mina Kime say that, but out loud, but I've had other people kind of say that to me as well, some version of that. But Adam Peters isn't the coach. They didn't hire an offensive coordinator out of the Shanahan tree. So I don't know that any of that matters as much, but maybe it does because he's got certain attributes. You know, I definitely am hearing more people. Well, if I say more, I don't want to suggest that means it's a majority, but I just mean like I'm hearing more people say they would consider taking McCarthy over May, or that they like McCarthy more than May. I had Chris Sims on my podcast. I haven't put it up yet, but we talked this weekend. You know, he's definitely not a May guy. So there's definitely a lot of that going on. But, you know, this is the part that I find really fascinating about this whole process, is that you're hearing all this noise from people, sources who, in the NFL, who seem to not be as in love with Drake May as others. And they're the ones who you're hearing more about. Hey, yeah, they'd be willing to take McCarthy and Daniels over May. But when you hear the public evaluators, like our guy Dane Brugler and like Nate Tice, they did a podcast on our network the other day, and they were both just like almost gushing about how Drake May's got to be the second guy. And I see other people saying that as well on the outside. It is a very odd disconnect. I think Drake May definitely looks the part, but there's clearly something that is spooking league people at this point. And, you know, we'll find out soon enough who, not so much who's right, but whose instincts are right, I guess, because, you know, he'll either go two or he won't. And again, if he goes three, that doesn't mean it was like some, oh my Lord, what a terrible prospect. But it'll be interesting to see where he ends up, because like I said, there really is this weird disconnect between the outside and the inside.
Much more with Ben Standing in moments. Well, there may be a disconnect regarding opinions on Drake May and Jaden Daniels, but there is zero disconnect regarding how good Nova Fireplace and Stove is. Make sure that your home is prepared for next winter and at a great price. Nova Fireplace and Stove offers fireplace safety inspections, fireplace tune-ups, and gas fireplace repairs. And if yours is a fireplace that burns wood, Nova Fireplace and Stove offers chimney safety inspections and chimney cleanings. And if you have a masonry fireplace, listen up. Nova Fireplace and Stove right now is offering the following deal to listeners of the Al Galdi podcast: an in-stock wood insert at an extremely discounted price, just $6,000 plus tax. The usual price is $9,000 plus tax, so this is a 33% discount, and the $6,000 plus tax includes installation, permit, and county/city inspection, and you can get a government-funded tax credit as well, up to $2,000, dropping the price to just $4,000, all things considered. Nova Fireplace and Stove. It is awesome. It is family owned. It is a 5-star dealer. Visit NovaFireplaceAndStove.com to check out customer reviews, and call Nova Fireplace and Stove 571-513-3803. Talk to Stuart Moore. He is the general manager. He's a big Commanders fan, and he's a loyal listener of this podcast. And make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. Nova Fireplace and Stove, 571-513-3803. And make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. Nova Fireplace and Stove also installs generators, water heaters, security lights, and custom outdoor kitchens. There is so much that Nova Fireplace and Stove can do for you. Contact Nova Fireplace and Stove and get the customer service that you deserve. 571-513-3803. And make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. That's Nova Fireplace and Stove, 571-513-3803. And make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. We're talking with Commanders insider Ben Standing of The Athletic. 90 plus percent of the 2024 NFL Draft quarterback talk with the Commanders has been about Drake May, Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy, and also USC's Caleb Williams, though not so much lately with him, given that it is now quite clear that he's going to be taken by the Chicago Bears with their number one overall pick. But when you talk to people in and around the NFL, do other quarterbacks, guys like Washington's Michael Penix Jr. and Oregon's Bo Nix, at all come up as being worthy of a first-round pick to where the Commanders are trading down and taking one of those guys might make sense?
I guess it feels like that's a, you know, mixed bag here. I think people are waiting from the McCarthy momentum to be this year's version of Will Levis, talked about as a top-five pick, falls to the second round. Malik Willis, top-five pick conversation, falls to the third, et cetera. I think, if I had to guess on that, I think it's maybe more of the Knicks Penix thing. Now, there is enough desperate teams out there needing a quarterback, and we all know you need one. And some of the things that might be viewed negative for those guys, they're a little bit older, for example, that maybe other teams are like, hey, you know, he's not 40, like he's 24 or whatever, right? I mean, we need somebody who can go today. If that experience, we'll worry about 5 to 10 years when we get there. We need somebody now to see if we can build something with. And when you have Minnesota at 11, Denver at 12, the Raiders at 13, I guess it wouldn't surprise me if one of those teams said, let's do it. But on the other hand, it feels like that's just, I'm not feeling that consistently enough. And in Penix's case, like I've had some people say they think he's the third best guy on the board. Not that you would consider him at two, but just like, you know, they like him. But, not, you know, a lot of other people don't seem to be as enamored or view him as a first round pick, maybe a first round pick because teams are going to get desperate, but not based on if you're ranking your big board type deal. So, I still maintain that I think the trade down idea is very, very fascinating for Washington from a big picture perspective, if they are just not flat out in love with one of these guys. But it does, you know, it seems like it's going to be hard to believe. And to your point before about how the importance of this draft, if the best thing to do is trade down, then trade down. But boy, that's not going to go over well with the ticket buying fan base. And I can't, that has to be some factor, right? Especially if it's close. So if you're saying the options are, boy, we really like Jaden Daniels, but we can get all this stuff. Boy, you really have to decide you don't like Jaden Daniels to trade. So that's why I haven't heard a ton about Penix, but I just, it doesn't, if I had to guess, I would guess it's more later first or day two, but there are people that really like him.
And if the Commanders do trade down and do not get a franchise quarterback, they better not have traded themselves out of taking a franchise quarterback. Like, if they trade down, do not get a franchise quarterback, and it turns out that someone who they could have taken with the number two overall pick is a franchise quarterback, good luck with that. That is a shame that Adam Peters and the team would have to wear for years to come.
Well, and just a quick attack on one thing. If the Bears hadn't gotten the number one pick out of that deal with Carolina, can you imagine the conversation that they traded out of the pick and didn't get CJ Stroud? Right? I mean, if only because this happens to be a big quarterback year, they just happen to trade to the team that ended up being the worst, are we not having that conversation? And then maybe maybe Justin Fields is still there or whatever. But yeah, I mean, you don't miss unless you're guaranteed to get the number one pick the next year when a perceived generational quarterback is coming out.
Yeah, that is true. This is the first time that we've spoken since the NFL's annual league meeting, which took place last week in Orlando, Florida. You were there. Many people from the Commanders were there. General Manager Adam Peters on March 25th in his session with you and other reporters said that the team is not interested in trading interior defensive lineman Jonathan Allen. You and I had talked about the possibility of the Commanders trading Allen. I don't think that they necessarily should, but ultimately, why do you think that the team isn't trading Allen?
So on the Allen thing, I want to pull up the quote here because I want to make sure that I'm looking at this correctly here. He says, okay, so he's asked, is Jonathan Allen Whoops, I just lost it. He's asked, is Jonathan Allen, who said previously he didn't necessarily know if he wanted to go through another rebuild, or is he staying? And Peter says, quote, we've had some great talks with Jonathan, and I can't wait to work with him. He's awesome. He's a great young man. And he's a great player, blah, blah, blah. So we are not interested in trading him. That is not the same as saying we're not trading him. I think the question to ask is, where are we at with contract negotiations with Jonathan Allen? Because he doesn't have any guaranteed money left on his deal. You know, he's still making quite a good money. I'm sure the Al Galdi podcast does you fine, but, you know, I'm sure you'd like Jonathan Allen's contract, as would I, but it is outside now the top 10 of defensive tackles. He's not even the number one guy on his own team, as we know. I have to imagine there's got to be a conversation here at some point from his side about wanting a new deal. Now, that's not to say that they're going to force it. This is going to be a contentious matter. They have the cap space. They could just decide, let's do this. But to me, that's the fault line. If there is a conversation and it doesn't go anywhere, I mean, he didn't say we're not trading him. He said we're not interested in trading him. And maybe that's semantics. But, you know, again, we're all trying to piece Adam Peters and Dan Quinn together. And, you know, he also said nice things about Sam Howell, and then they traded Sam Howell. He even said nice things the other day at the meeting about, hey, you know, we want to have four quarterbacks, but look, you know, we're good. If we have Mariota and Jake Fromm, we're good. And then they signed Jeff Driskel, who is a, you know, the definition of a journeyman, probably right now would bump Fromm off the depth chart. So he is saying things, but I don't necessarily know that they mean anything definitive. Again, we would like that. We would like him to be a little more definitive, something Ron Rivera did enough for us, or for the most part. But, you know, again, I'm not saying they are trading him, or that I've heard that they're trading him per se. I'm just saying that to me is the story. Where are we at with contracts? If that was not the question that was asked, that is the question I think that needs to be asked in that regard.
That's interesting. Do you think that John Allen is worthy of substantially more guaranteed money? Like, would it be more prudent for the Commanders to trade Allen as opposed to giving him substantially more guaranteed money?
Yeah, no, it's, you know, people have been asking, well, to some degree, hey, I kind of like what they're doing this offseason, but, you know, they haven't been spending a ton. And, you know, I kind of view it as, why would you spend a lot of money this coming, like Brandon Ayuk? You know, there seems to be some potential friction there with him and the 49ers over a new deal. Adam Peters clearly would know Ayuk. Do you think it would make sense for Washington to go make a trade? And I'm like, well, I mean, maybe if Peters wants him, then that's a good sign, right? Because he's going to know the guy, not just the highlights. But on the other hand, if he's going to get 20-something million a year, and forget the fact that you can manipulate a contract and move money around, if you think you're not going to be good next year, do you want to do it then? Do you want to spend the money on a guy knowing that next year is not probably going anywhere? Or would you rather wait a year and then do it to some, you know, somebody else? That would be my question with Allen, is like, sort of like, all right, well, so what end are we paying? Like, he's, you know, he's not old, but he is getting up there. He's been in the league since 2017 at this point, you know, at a demanding position. Last year, he was dealing with some plantar fasciitis. We'll assume that's going to be fine. I think that's my question, is how quickly do they see themselves competing? How much do they see him as a key component for this locker room culture? Sorry, I'm going to put a dollar in the jar for saying the C word. But you know, that to me would be the question there. They clearly would be a worse team if they move him, right? But if they're not going to be a significantly better team anyway, then do you really want to pay the guy more when you're going to, again, I'm not saying you're losing a year, but it's not a year where you're realistically competing. Do you want to spend that money there, or do you want to wait and see what happens?
Also, at the NFL's annual league meeting was a session that you guys had with Commanders managing partner Josh Harris on March 26th. A lot of that session was spent discussing the team stadium situation. You, in fact, asked Harris about whether he was monitoring the Capitol/Wizards arena situation, which since then has taken quite the turn. The agreement for the new arena in the Potomac Yard area of Alexandria, Virginia, for Caps and Wizards home games beginning with the team's 2028-2029 seasons now is off. And the team now is poised to stay at Capital One Arena in Washington, D.C. until at least 2050, though D.C., under the terms of this deal, will spend $515 million on Capital One Arena over 3 years. To what extent does this lessen the likelihood of the Commanders' next stadium being in D.C.?
Well, if I say 100%, that doesn't mean that they're not going to be in DC, but 100%. I mean, I don't see how it could be viewed otherwise. Like I'll be honest with you, Al. I don't spend a ton of my time watching live stream of DC City Council meetings. It's not how I roll. But on Twitter, I happen to be paying attention. I follow somebody who noted that this meeting was about to start. So I watched it. I don't think the commanders were ever mentioned directly, but there were a lot of questions about, well, you're spending a ton of money on there, you know, and the chairperson who is Phil Mendelson, who has previously said he's not really in favor of the spending for a Commander Stadium. This is before they just spent the 500 or agreed to spend the $515 million on the Cap One. And based on that, and this is, again, not that guy, but based on this conversation, I don't, and my own thoughts, I don't see how DC can afford this just in general. Like, there are a ton of questions about how are they going to, you know, is it justifiable to spend this? Well, the Commander Stadium would be more. And now, like, you're already doing this. Plus, you know, one of the teams you care a lot about, the Nats, right? Are they going to be coming down the pike here soon and being like, hey, we're here too. We're already here. You just gave that guy money, meaning Leontis. What about us? We've got the things we'd like to do and fix and improve and so on. So I don't know. I just don't see how DC is affording this. It's like the salary cap. Maybe the budget is not real. Maybe you can just manipulate everything and rack up debt, and it's not a big issue. But it felt like there was enough objections already to put into question. And I really wonder how they're coming up with the money. Whereas Maryland is sitting there going, hey, we're ready to go. We're already building this, you know, the mini city area. You've got the land. We're ready to work with you because we don't want to lose you, right? It's one thing when you're an incumbent, you don't want to. That's why Mayor Bowser was like, oh, crap, Ted might leave. What do I do here? I think Maryland's in the same boat. Maryland clearly has other things on their mind right now because of the tragedy in Baltimore, but they've already earmarked whatever money they're willing to spend. And by the way, in that Josh Harris meeting, he said kind of matter-of-factly, yeah, we're already in deep conversations with Maryland. And then the very next day, Ted Leontis and DC announced what they announced. So, yeah, to me, there's a lot of reading of the tea leaves that says, and to be clear, I have been saying Maryland always. I've never bought into Virginia, and obviously RFK was the nostalgic site, but again, there seemed to be a lot of pushback there, where Maryland is pretty much been, ever from the governor on down, seems to be on board with getting them back. So yeah, I do think there's a lot of questions now about DC for the Commanders.
This stadium saga for the Redskins / Washington football team / Commanders has been going on for so long. Do you think that by the end of this year, we will know where the Commanders' next stadium will be?
You know, this is probably where, like, I don't know how, like, it feels like, say, the RFK site in terms of the federal government is heading in the proper direction. It's already been approved through Congress to have DC essentially take control of the site, which they hadn't had previously. And by taking control, that would allow them to, if they wanted to, put a mini city there. The deal was up till now, or including now, they could only put a stadium there. It wasn't zoned for the other stuff. So if all that other stuff matters, which it seems to for all these owners, then that's a better deal. That may be the type of thing that Harris is like, all right, let's do this. But that it's not done yet. You can't, you know, Harris called this, you know, a lot. He said, like, a lot of this is still up to politics. So, you know, I don't, red tape's a thing, right? I don't think, I don't know how quickly we move on that. I mean, it's only April. It feels like it's fast with April in terms of the draft. In terms of the question you just asked, there's still a long way to go. So I'm going to guess no, but that's more because of, like, bureaucracy. Like, I imagine Josh Harris knows what he wants to do. He already has a pretty good feel for the numbers, but he can't do anything until the various red tape options are put away. And, you know, I don't see Virginia being involved anymore. If nothing else, they showed they're not ready for prime time when it comes to this type of decision based on what just happened with Leontis. But, who knows? Maybe they, you know, collect themselves, get off the mat, and figure out a way to make an offer that, you know, puts in a whole other component to this. But, yeah, I would say not by the end of the year.
And on it may continue to go. Commanders insider Ben Standing of The Athletic. Ben, thanks, and we'll talk soon.
Always a pleasure, my guy. See ya.
All right. Hey, if you are a Commanders fan, make sure that you're checking out bgobsession.com. You can placate your burgundy and gold obsession at bgobsession.com. BG Obsession, or BGO, has been the home of the most knowledgeable, friendly, and passionate Washington fans on the web since 2009. BGO is a special place at which you can join your fellow fans for some smart football discussion, great contests, game day chats, and even lifelong friendships. So what are you waiting for? Visit and join BGO at bgobsession.com, home to your burgundy and gold obsession. Well, the Capitals on Tuesday night began a stretch of 9 games in 15 days to conclude the team's 2023-2024 regular season, and the Caps on Tuesday night began that stretch with a loss, a 6-2 loss at the Buffalo Sabres, a disappointing loss for our Caps, and the loss came on a night on which other results were not favorable for the Caps. Also on Tuesday night was the New York Islanders defeating the Chicago Blackhawks 2-1 and the Pittsburgh Penguins winning at the New Jersey Devils 6-3. So the Caps for this NHL regular season now are 36-28-10 and still have 82 points. So the Caps are tied with the Detroit Red Wings for the Eastern Conference's second and final wildcard spot, but the Caps have the tiebreaker due to having played one fewer game this regular season than the Red Wings have played. The Caps are a point behind the Philadelphia Flyers for third in the Metropolitan Division, as the top three teams in each division make the Stanley Cup playoffs. And the Caps are bunched in tight with a number of teams, including the Islanders and Penguins. So the Caps are just 1 point ahead of the Islanders and are just 2 points ahead of the Penguins. And next up for the Caps are the Penguins. The Caps are home to the Pens Thursday night at 7. But as for this 6-2 loss at the Sabres on Tuesday night, so Caps defenseman Martin Fehervaari scored an even-strength goal 2:46 into the first period, but the Caps then lost the rest of the game 6-1. Charlie Lindgren was the Caps starting goaltender for the 27th time in 35 games, but he stopped just 25 of the 31 shots on goal that he faced and was pulled in the third period in favor of Darcy Kemper, who stopped all four of the shots on goal that he faced. The Caps lost the puck possession battle. They had just 25 shots on goal to the Sabres 35, and per natural stat trick had 47 5-on-5 shot attempts to the Sabres 59. Caps head coach Spencer Carberry, during his post-game session with reporters on Tuesday night, openly admitted that the Caps had problems with the Sabres' speed and skill. Fast teams give our Caps problems. We've seen that in the Caps' two recent losses to the Toronto Maple Leafs. So the Caps on Tuesday night went a brutal 0-2 on the penalty kill. Did go 1-3 on the power play as second-line center Dylan Strome scored a power play goal 19-14 into the second period, giving him 26 goals in this regular season, tied with top-line left wing Alex Ovechkin for the most goals on the Caps. Also, Strome had a game-high 5 shots on goal and a team-high 7 total shot attempts and went a terrific 13-2 on faceoffs. Ovechkin had a secondary assist, 5 total shot attempts, and a game-high 4 hits. The Caps on Tuesday night did get back defenseman Rasmus Sandin. He returned from a 1-game absence caused by a lower body injury, but the Caps remained without a defenseman in Ethan Bear due to him being in the NHL's and NHL Players Association's player assistance program. And the Caps remained without winger Tom Wilson, who served the final game of his 6-game suspension without pay for high-sticking Maple Leafs forward Noah Gregor in the third period of the Caps' 7-3 loss to the Maple Leafs at Capital One Arena on March 20th. And so next up for the Caps is the return of Tom Wilson in that big game against the Penguins on Thursday night. Well, for a second time in three games, the Orioles suffered a 4-1 loss. Tuesday evening, a 4-1 loss to the Kansas City Royals at Oriole Park at Camden Yards in game two of a three-game series. The O's in this young 2024 MLB regular season now are 3-2. The three wins have totaled 30 runs, and in the two losses have totaled just 2 runs. And the Orioles offense on Tuesday evening did very little. The O scored just 1 run, totaled just 3 hits, and worked just 1 walk. The top 4 batters in the Orioles lineup, shortstop Gunnar Henderson, catcher Adley Rutschman, DH Anthony Santander, and first baseman Ryan Mountcastle, those 4 guys went a combined 0-16 with no walks and 4 strikeouts. Cole Irvin was the Orioles starting pitcher on Tuesday evening. He allowed 4 runs in 5 innings, gave up 7 hits, which were comprised of a triple, a double, and 5 singles. He issued 2 walks. He recorded 3 strikeouts, did throw a lot of strikes, 81 pitches, 55 strikes versus just 26 balls. This season is Irvin's age 30 season. He very clearly is the team's number 5 starter. The O's got him via trade with the Oakland A's on January 26th. 2023. He made the Orioles 2023 regular season opening major league rotation, but he, over his first 3 starts last regular season, had an ERA of a 10.66 and a whip of 1.97. And so the O's on April 14th, 2023, announced that they had optioned Irvin to AAA Norfolk, and he spent the rest of the season going back and forth between the majors and AAA, and between being a starter and a reliever. A bright spot for the O's on Tuesday evening was the bullpen. 3 Orioles relievers combined for 4 scoreless innings. Dylan Tate tossed a scoreless top of the 6th with 2 swinging strikeouts. Jacob Webb tossed a perfect top of the 7th with 2 swinging strikeouts, and Jonathan Heasley tossed 2 scoreless, hitless, and walkless innings with 2 strikeouts. So the O's on Sunday afternoon announced having recalled Heasley from AAA Norfolk, this as the corresponding roster move to placing reliever Cionel Perez on the 15-day injured list with a right oblique strain. This was O's manager Brandon Hyde during his post-game press conference on Tuesday night.
One good thing about this game, I thought our bullpen threw the ball great. You know, I thought Webby threw the ball really well, and Heasley there last couple innings did a nice job. It was nice just being able to go inning apiece, 2 innings with Heasley there, and not have to try to mix and match and burn a bunch of guys for tomorrow.
And speaking of tomorrow, game 3 for the O's against the Royals at Oriole Park at Camden Yards is on Wednesday afternoon at 1:05. The Orioles ace, Corbin Burnes, will be the Orioles starting pitcher. So, did you happen to see what college basketball insider Jeff Goodman of the Field of 68 posted on X on Monday afternoon? Quote, multiple veteran NBA execs say the same thing about this draft. It's the worst draft they have ever seen. End quote. Yeah, not exactly what you want to read or hear if you're a Wizards fan like me. And so maybe it's not so bad if our tanking and rebuilding Wizards do win a few games in these dying days of the NBA's 2023-2024 regular season. Well, the Wizards on Tuesday night did win maybe their most impressive win of the season. I know that that's not saying much, but a 117-113 win over the Milwaukee Bucks at Capital One Arena on Tuesday night. The Bucks for this regular season have the second best record in the Eastern Conference. Now, yes, the Bucks on Tuesday night were without one of their best players and point guard Damian Lillard due to a right groin strain, but the Wizards on Tuesday night were depleted big time. First of all, the Wizards lost a starter during the game. Marvin Bagley III played for just 9 minutes 21 seconds as a starter. He left the game due to what interim head coach Brian Keefe during his post-game press conference called a right knee sprain. Kyle Kuzma did not play for a second consecutive game due to a right heel contusion. Tyus Jones did not play for a 10th consecutive game due to a back injury. Rashawn Holmes did not play for a third consecutive game due to a left toe contusion. Landry Shamet did not play for a 12th consecutive game due to a left calf strain. Additionally, remaining done for the season are Bilal Coulibaly due to a right wrist fracture and Isaiah Livers due to a right hip ailment. Additionally, the Wizards NBA G League affiliate, the Capital City Go-Go, it hosted a playoff game on Tuesday evening, so the Wizards also were without three other players as those guys were with the Go-Go. The Wizards did get back Eugene Omoruyi. He returned from a 7-game absence caused by a sprained right ankle. But still, the Wizards were missing so many players, and yet the Wizards beat the Bucks. In fact, the Wizards in the second half never trailed. The Wizards allowed a 15-point third-quarter lead to get cut to just 2 points in the final minute of the fourth quarter, but the Wizards ultimately led for the entire second half. The Wizards held the Bucks to just 11-48 on threes, did allow the Bucks to go 34-55 on twos, and did get worked by the Greek freak, Giannis Antetokounmpo. He had a triple-double. Giannis, in just 36 minutes, 19 seconds as a starter, went 15 of 21 from the field, all twos. He did go just 5-9 on free throws, but he finished with 35 points, 15 rebounds, including three offensive boards and 10 assists versus two turnovers. Also, the Wizards won despite having just five offensive rebounds to the Bucks' 18 and thus four second chance points to the Bucks' 23. And the Wizards won despite going just 9-38 on threes. But the Wizards scored 70 points in the paint and going an outstanding 35-47 in the paint. A lot of heroes for the Wizards in this win. Corey Kispert, 38 minutes, 4 seconds as a starter, 4 of 11 on threes, 6 of 7 on twos, and 3 of 4 on free throws. He finished with 27 points and 7 rebounds. Denny Avdija, 38 minutes, 49 seconds as a starter, 0 of 5 on threes, but 10 of 12 on twos and 3 of 4 on free throws. He finished with 23 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists versus 3 turnovers, and a game-best plus-minus rating of plus 9. Jordan Poole, his improved play continued. 35 minutes, 19 seconds as a starter. Now, he went just 1 of 6 on threes, but also 5 of 8 on twos and 3 of 3 on free throws. He finished with 16 points, 13 assists versus 3 turnovers, 4 rebounds, and 2 steals. And the Wizards got key contributions from 2 reserves. Jared Butler, 17 minutes, 29 seconds off the bench, 17 points, 3 assists versus no turnovers, 3 rebounds, and 2 steals. He went 3 of 3 on threes and 4 of 7 on twos. And the big man, 7-foot Tristan Vukcevic, 31 minutes, 3 seconds off the bench, went just 1 of 6 on threes, but also 4 of 5 on twos and 3 of 3 on free throws. He finished with 14 points, 7 rebounds, and 3 assists versus 1 turnover. Good to see Vukcevic contribute. I want to see Vukcevic play down the stretch here. The Wizards on March 14th announced the signing of Vukcevic to a multi-year deal. They took him in the second round of the 2023 NBA draft. The Wizards under Brian Keefe have been better. Not good, okay, but better. It was on January 25th that Monumental Basketball president Michael Winger announced that Wes Unseld Jr. was out as Wizards head coach. The Wizards at the time were just 7-36 in this regular season. Their record under Keefe is 8-25. Again, not good, but better. The Wizards at 15-61 have the second worst record in the NBA. Here was Keefe during his post-game press conference on Tuesday night.
It was a team effort. Everybody contributed. Obviously, we got down a little bit of numbers, but we just kind of stuck to the game of the game. We trusted the pass, and we finished off the game in the fourth. But credit to the guys who were on the court tonight. Terrific job.
Yes, sir. Next up for the Wizards, home to the Los Angeles Lakers, Wednesday night at 7. And that will do it for you and me for now. Keep the feedback coming. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Thursday show episode 798. We'll provide you with more on the Commanders. Also on Thursday's show, I'll talk Nationals, Orioles, and Wizards. The Nats on Wednesday evening at 6:45 have game two of their three-game series against the Pittsburgh Pirates at Nationals Park. The O's on Wednesday afternoon at 1:05 have game three of their three-game series against the Kansas City Royals at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. And the Wizards are home to the Los Angeles Lakers Wednesday night at 7. Have a great rest of your Wednesday, and I'll talk to you on Thursday.
That was the best I've ever seen a quarterback do at a pro day.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.